You've lived a great life and done well for yourself. But what mark will you leave on the world? How will you inspire future generations? Stan Miller and Katie Beth Hand have helped thousands of people answer exactly those questions. If you've ever wondered, what will be my legacy? You're in the right place. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Legacy podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Stan and Katie Beth.
Well, good morning, George. How you doing?
It's a great day. Wonderful to be able to be around, and not only to be around, but also to hopefully be making a difference in the lives of other people.
Good. Yeah. No, you've been doing that for a long time, and I know we've known each other for quite a while. So welcome to the podcast, and we'll just give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about that, about all the stuff that you've done, and obviously you've had help. But this is, say, first of all, since I know George so well, I'm probably skipping a few things. First of all, a lot of you listening probably don't know who George Steiner is. George Steiner is the founder of two ministries, most recently, a ministry called Orphans Tree that works in Russia, working with Russian orphans, easy for me to say. And George, I think the big thing, you've been doing this for right almost 30 years in terms of as a leader, and then you were working in Russia before that. What, maybe you could just tell listeners how you got into all of this, and then, you know, why you had the crazy idea to found your own organization.
I grew up, like most kids of the 50s and 60s, with some fear of Russia, and certainly not a fan of Russia. And so when I joined International Bible Society in 1991, they were doing a project in Russia called the Moscow Project. And at that point in time, I was head of major donors there. And so I looked around to say, what are we doing and where are we doing it? And what could we take people to go and see? And so in the summer of 1991, we took a group to Russia. It was a rather large group. Russia had just been opening, and so it was popular to go. And we had 54 people who went on a trip to distribute Bibles, and there was also some media members as well. And I went because it was part of my job. It wasn't because I had some kind of draw or attraction or call to Russia. I assumed it would be a one-time trip, and went there and had a great time distributing Bibles, getting to know people in underground churches, some Russian Orthodox priests, some other people that translators, interpreters, a couple of them became staff members later on in my journey. And so it's like going anywhere. You find out that people are people and there's relationships to be built. And once those start, we don't view countries the same way anymore. We view them as individuals, not as some political structure. And so that was my first introduction to Russia. And then I started going each year. I was assigned as assistant to the president, and one of the responsibilities was over Russia programs. And so that became the beginning of going to Russia. And from there, started going back and started going into orphanages in 1993. So that was 30 years ago. So that really changed my whole perspective and my life in many ways.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about what was the status or the condition in most of the orphanage at that time. I imagine 30 years ago, I know I've seen, I think there's a movie out that's really good. I forget what city it was filmed in, but about, I think it's called The Italian. I don't know if you've seen that. I don't know how much that characterizes what you saw in orphanages or if you have seen that movie, but what were things like 30 years ago?
It was hard. Russia had collapsed. The Soviet Union had collapsed at the end of 1991, and Russia was finding its way. And I've always felt like the people that get most left out in dramatic changes, government changes, are the oldest and the youngest. And when I started going into orphanages in 93, I clearly remember orphanage directors being distraught that their orphanages were so overcrowded. There might be an orphanage that was for 50 kids and there'd be 75 kids in it, or an orphanage that was for 200 that had 300 in it. And so it was difficult, but they all had this great hope that over the next several years, there would be things would get better and kids would go back to parents and things would improve and it would go back to more, quote, normal. And that's not the case at all. It actually got worse. And so when we first became aware in 1992 of the Russian population of orphans and population in Russia, it was 400 to 420,000. By 2000, it was 850,000. So over that 8-year period, it doubled in the number of orphans that were in institutions. And there wasn't money. There just wasn't. We saw orphans pass out from hunger, saw orphans running out in the snow with rags wrapped around their feet. So just the very basics. So they needed everything. They needed new roofs. They needed medical equipment. They needed medicines. They needed food. They needed clothing. It was all the physical needs. And frankly, that's the first thing that we are attracted to or that we notice are those physical needs. But beyond that, there's also the great emotional trauma that kids have gone through and spiritual needs as well. So those were the things that really moved me in deep ways to start ministry in orphanages.
Yeah. And then a couple of things that I know about that come out of that. But talk a little bit first about why found your own organization. That's a big step in a place like Russia, right? It's not like you just fill out a form and say, oh, I want to be a 501c3, right?
Doug, you asked that question, and I certainly asked myself that question. Because in 1994, when I felt that I needed to do something because nothing that I could see was being done specifically, I had to deal with, am I a hypocrite? Because I had criticized people that started other ministries. Don't we have enough ministries? Aren't there enough people out there vying for American donors and so forth? And it was a question for me. And frankly, I didn't feel very qualified. I knew a little bit about fundraising. I didn't know anything about programs. And I sensed that that God would provide other people that would come along and help. And so that really became important for me because, as I think it's probably true, if most of us are honest with ourselves, there are so many things that we do not do well that we absolutely need other people or that we need to work with other organizations and partnering. So there's different ways to go about it. But the truth is, none of us have all the qualifications of starting an organization. And I certainly felt that way. And frankly, I still probably have some of those same feelings.
Okay. Yeah. What were some of the, were there some hurdles? And if so, what were some of the major hurdles to get that even started? You mentioned one, partnering or finding people to come alongside you were things that may not have been in your skill set. What, anything else that?
The super practical one is financially. We didn't have a big donor. We didn't have any. We had got together a board, and it wasn't a wealthy board necessarily. So we didn't have any guaranteed. So the hardest discussion for me in starting the organization was with my wife. I was assistant to the president at a old and stable organization, and talking about starting a new organization that we didn't know month to month whether we were going to make it or not. So there was that trust and that God would provide. It's uncomfortable to be in that spot. So that was certainly a hurdle. Another hurdle really was just understanding culture. And one of the things that I believe strongly in is local national leadership. And so we really gave a lot of responsibility and authority to Russians themselves, because it was their country. It's not ours to make what we want it to be, but theirs for them to create what they want. And gave a lot to that so that they can see things that we can't see. I still don't speak Russian. I've been going to Russia for 30 plus years. The most embarrassing question I get all the time is, oh, then I assume you speak Russian. No, I don't. I can probably survive on a few phrases and I know a lot of words. I can understand some things, but basically survival Russian is what I would say that I have. And how can I really understand the culture? How can I really understand its history? How can I really understand its people? And so really, we're dependent on having strong local leaders in the country as well.
And one other thing before I'm going to move on to a couple of other things, but one of the things I thought of that I know has been a real passion for you for a number of years is the kids leaving the orphanage too, because that's a whole ball game unto itself, right?
I have a tendency to ask the question often, and then what? So kids are in an orphanage now, and then what? Then they get out and they go to technical school and they live in a dormitory, and then what? Are they going to go into crime, or are they going to get a job? Are they going to go into prostitution, or are they going to get married? It's just, and so I've almost always wanted to know what's beyond today for that. And so that question of, and then what, I think has been something that's driven me a lot. And so even early on, even though I would say today that Children's Hope Chest primarily focuses on orphanage work, our almost exclusive work is with post-orphanage care, so older kids. And so with Orphans Tree, it's more of young people that are in their 16 to 25-year-old range, and a very challenging time. Not the easiest kids to promote. Kids hanging out smoking a cigarette on a corner is not nearly as attractive as a couple young children that look hungry or cold or whatever from a donor standpoint. But for us, it was really the passion of how can we save these kids? Literally, they were just dying. At one point, there was a statistic by the Russian government that almost 15% of kids committed suicide within 2 years of coming out of an orphanage. And that's really the definition of hopelessness. And so we wanted to say, how can we provide hope in a really bleak situation? And so that really became a focus of and drive of working with kids after they leave their institutions.
Yeah. And I know there's a number of other statistics you can give. If you had to estimate, just because of your work and the work of the organizations you founded, have you ever thought about like how many kids, how many Russians, how many families you've impacted over the 30 years? Is there, maybe that's not something you...
Yeah, no, I couldn't do that. I can tell you that, for instance, in the 90s, from an American standpoint, the 90s was like this open door to go to Russia, and it was the hot spot. People wanted to go. And in the first 10 years of the organization, we had over 10,000 travelers that went to Russia. So there were a lot of summer camps. There were a lot of churches that sponsored orphanages that would go and return and return. You were among those. And so those kinds of numbers we have more of. In many ways, Russia has become much smaller from an orphanage population, institutionalized, like most more modern countries. Starting in about 2005, they started promoting and pushing from the top foster care instead of institutional care, which I'm also a proponent of. And today, there's probably less than 60,000 orphans in institution. And most of those have either special needs or psychiatric needs or chemical dependence issues, fairly severe kinds of issues like that, that they won't survive very well in a foster family. One of the things that I think is true about anything in life is change is inevitable. And we have to be able to stay on top of that change and say, okay, how do we do things differently now to reach the population that we're called to reach? And so for us, it's been ongoing change with that. And how we did ministry 20 years ago and how we're doing it today are very different.
Yeah. And you mentioned something too about how many Americans have traveled. I know, again, you mentioned that I've been a number of times, but yeah, the impact on Americans and maybe sensitivity to Russia and to what's really going on with Russian orphans and kids leaving the orphanage and that support has been pretty amazing, too. So talk a little bit, you mentioned earlier about your wife and some of those discussions, especially early on when there was no money. But your kids are grown now. They've been through a lot of that. What's the impact been on your family and I guess both conscious and unconscious? Obviously your values show through. So what?
Well, I'm like any grandfather. I'm very proud of family. And the older we get, the more we realize that there's some things that last forever, and it's important to invest in those things. And one of those certainly is family. But you can also say friends, and you can say colleagues, those were kinds of relationships. But from my family standpoint, people often praise me for, oh, it was that great that you did all this. And I'm like, I loved it. It was fun. I was traveling back and forth to Russia 5 or 6 times a year. It became my second home. I had lots of friendships. The people who sacrificed really were my family. It was my 2 daughters were in high school and junior high when I started, and they lived without a dad for a period of time. Starting the ministry is like starting a business. It's all consuming. There's really not room for a whole lot of other things. But we did do a number of special things together because I was traveling a lot. I was getting air miles, and ministries allow people to use some of that for family time. And so we were able to do some travel and do some different things together as family. But we've always been very close and continue to be. And my wife is very committed to different prayer ministries. And I've just been so grateful for that. Part of the importance of support for the ministry. My oldest daughter, Rebecca, works part-time with the ministry and helps me with foundations and some major donors and next generation people as far as communication about what's going on in Russia. And then my youngest daughter, Meredith, is on the board. She's a very strategic thinker and highly respected by other board members. And it's just been it's been something that has been good for us, but there was sacrifice. And I, as I said, they were the ones that did more of the sacrifice in many ways than I did.
Yeah. And we're talking about the overarching topic of legacy. And it seemed to me, as an outsider who has known you for a little while, you've built quite a legacy? I think you have. How do you view that when you hear that term legacy and legacy building?
Yeah, there's ways that I think there will be a legacy, and I hope so. But I tend to not really care about having a lot of public kind of adulation or those kinds of things. But I think the important thing is there's a great book by Eugene Peterson called, It's Long Obedience in the Same Direction.
Oh, right.
And I think that whatever we do in life, if we focus on that and continue on that path, once we found it, honestly, it took me a long time to find out what I wanted to do. In my 20s, I bounced from one job to another. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I'm always empathetic with young people that don't know necessarily this is what I'm going to do when they're 18 years old. But once I found it, I just felt like, hey, this is what I'm called to do. Even though Russia is not the easiest country to work in, and there's been a lot of times it would be easy to throw my hands up in the air and say, why, there's other places that would appreciate what we're doing more than what Russia does. But I've always felt, hey, this is where we've been planted, and this is where people trust us that know us. So we're going to continue, because even if things are really, really dreary right now, we believe that there'll be a new day at some point in time. And by our faithfulness, we'll have opportunities to share and to work in ways that we may not even imagine today. I actually think sometimes I think of the other side of legacy, and that's heritage. Mm-hmm. And when being appreciative of what we've received from so many other people as well. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's not just a heritage just from family. That was important, certainly. My father was a very humble guy. He was a pastor, small churches mostly. My mother was a great teacher and public speaker. But there's been so many mentors in my life, and so many other partners in my life. So many other people have either believed in me or invested in me. And so I'm really eternally grateful for those things. It's not just the legacy I left, but I will be leaving, hopefully, but also the heritage that I received, I'm grateful for.
Yeah. I think, I don't know Rebecca, but I know her, and I know she appreciates a lot of things about you. I know when you go to Russia, there's a lot of people that, in fact, there's sometimes you meet people and say, oh, do you know George? So obviously those people have been impacted. And then, of course, some of the folks that you worked with on boards over the years and things like that. Yeah, I guess in terms of, I guess, two more questions. One, in terms of your family's involved in the ministry, so obviously some of your legacy is in the process or has been passed down to them. How much of that was intentional and how much was that just your enthusiasm or something? They just decided they wanted to be part of what you were up to.
Yeah, I don't think that, certainly, I don't think they ever felt any pressure that they had to be part of. My view has always been, okay, there's been a lot of people that have gone to Russia on mission trips. Mm-hmm. And honestly, some people continue going back. The majority never will go back again. But my prayer always is that those people will be more sensitive to needs around them and find places to serve other people in their communities, in their state, in their country, wherever it is that they're called to work in. And so the same with my family. I'll use my daughter, Meredith, as an example. Meredith has never been a kid person. When she was in high school, she went to Russia with a church group with us. She didn't love it. It was not her thing because she's very, very much, as I mentioned earlier, a strategic thinker. And so what we found is she could help in other ways other than getting down on the floor and rolling around with kids and yucking it up and teaching them lessons and all those kinds of things that wasn't her gifting. But her gifting was in, how can we do this better? How can we do something that 10 years from now will make a difference in those lives? And part of it is just, in their case, has been finding not just the place, but also the role of how they would be involved as well. But that was really their decision. I was never going to push them toward, hey, let's go. I'll be disappointed if you don't go with me or whatever. Hopefully they never felt that at all.
Okay. So I guess the last question then is, we got listeners, I'm sure, that are sitting there thinking, that's all great, but I don't have what it takes to found an organization. I don't, either because of risk or desire or whatever. What do you have to say to them about maybe the legacy that they could leave to their families or to friends or colleagues, even just in maybe day-to-day jobs or, like you mentioned, travelers that show up once to a trip to Russia and don't go back? They don't have anything to feel guilty about, but they may be feeling like, gosh, Georgia's got this huge legacy to leave behind. What am I going to do, either for my kids or my colleagues or friends or family?
I know this is about legacy. I would say just be faithful to whatever it is that you feel called to do. If that's being a mother, you're being a great mother is going to leave a legacy. And it's an outcome. It's not necessarily the goal. It's an outcome of your faithfulness, your tenacity, your perseverance into the lives of other people. And whether that's your kids, whether your neighbor's kids, whether it's if you're in a profession, be known as a person who is consistent, who is constant, who is always there and supportive and cares about what they're doing and cares about other people around them. Those are critical legacies. The legacy of leaving $1 billion behind is maybe a good legacy. It's not all that important compared to things that last. But I think that your work in financial planning as well, as you look at it and you say, stick with it, whatever it is, once you have a plan, things aren't going to go well all the time. There's going to be dips. There's going to be changes. You adapt to what changes you can adapt to. But if you have a good plan, stick with it. And if you make mistakes, okay, everybody makes mistakes. We're human. And ask for forgiveness if you hurt someone in the process. Learn from the lesson, from the experience, and move on. But I can sit here and tell you many more things I've done wrong than I've done right. And yet, the ministry has still survived. The organization is healthy. And part of that is just that I have, I believe, continued to be obedient. But more importantly, probably is that there's just been so many other people around that have come alongside and helped. And so those are, I'm just, again, grateful for relationships.
Great. Well, George, I want to thank you for being with us on the podcast this morning. It's been great and getting to know you even a little bit better, even though we've chatted a lot in the past. But our listeners hopefully benefit and learn a lot more about you and also the organization, but also about, you know, how they can think about what they can do in their life. Like you said, to be obedient, to be consistent, those are all good values to pass on. So thanks again.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks for the opportunity to share. And thank you for your care, because you've cared not just for this organization, but specifically you care about individual kids that you've come to know and love and respect. So thanks.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to the Your Life, Your Legacy podcast with Stan Miller and Katie Beth Hand. If you enjoyed the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To find out more about Stan and Katie Beth, go to PinnacleLegacyLaw.com. You can also find links in the show notes.